You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Support for this podcast comes from the patrons at patreon.com/FMLFPL. Okay, welcome to the first Fireside Chat of the season. This is Alon. Today I'm joined by Anthony DeBundo from the Action Network. Anthony, what's happening?
Enjoying the off season. It's way too short to begin with. And this year with the Women's World Cup, you know, we've been busy with that. So a little bit, you know, later than usual start for me on Premier League prep, but always keeping up with the transfer news and generally have a good idea probably by the end of the last season who I might be lower or higher on.
Yeah.
Going into the next one. And there's already a couple teams where I'm just like, yeah, I'm not really buying the hype. So
when is Wonder Goal back? When is the Action Network's, you know, soccer podcast back in action?
So we haven't done any official dates yet on like when we're going to record, but the season starts, what, August 11th?
Yeah.
So we will be back probably the first week of August.
Like, okay.
July 31st, August 1st, 2nd, 3rd, kind of that week. With our, you know, big preview, and then we'll probably have you back on for our little point total draft last year.
I'm in.
We finished an even 10-10 last year as a group, so
yeah,
we drafted all 20 teams, and it was fun. And a lot of them, like three or four, came down to the last day, so it was entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll do that again, and you know, I think a lot of today is just going to be preliminary. There's so much that can change. There's still so much transfer window left, so we'll see what happens. But let's just start with the title. I mean, I think it's the logical place to start. City are favored as always. Any outsiders that you like this year? I mean, last year it was City favorites, Liverpool, the only relevant, like, close team to being, you know, second favorite. I think they were plus 250 last year. Now no team is near that. Arsenal's plus 500. Liverpool plus 750, United plus 900, and then, you know, long shots after that. Anyone you like?
You know, I often don't bet the Premier League title race preseason, yeah, just because I think it can change so much, and it's such a long year. I thank Arsenal for taking that huge lead built on a lot of flimsy late goals, because it enabled me to bet City repeatedly throughout the month of March.
You were hammering City on the podcast.
It was on our show. It was like, all right, well, it's a good week to add more money on City. It was just like, Arsenal is probably not going to hold this. They don't have the depth. And it did catch up with them. And now I think, like, Arsenal, if they had been priced at like 8, 9, 10 to 1, I would have been interested in them. But at 5 to 1, like, there's just not a ton of value in that, given how much of a leap this team already took.
Yeah.
I just don't know if they get enough out of Jesus Havertz to really keep up at the top. And if the defense is going to, you know, be more like the first half of the season when they were elite, but it was kind of like they can't really keep up this level of production, or if it's going to be more like the second half where they were leaking goals left and right against, you know, superior competition. Like, I just can't get that Liverpool game out of my head where, yeah, Arsenal were completely played off the park. And that game plus the City game, like, it feels like, if you buy Arsenal at 5 to 1 to win the league, you're almost buying them at like the peak of their value. They're never, yeah, going to be lower than that in the era of City, you know, dominance. But then there's also City. Like, there has to be some natural regression, natural kind of like fatigue from what happened at the end of last season. And we talked about this on our show. Like, City was not the same team that final month. And they really fell off. I didn't think they looked good against United. I didn't think they played well at all against Inter in the final. De Bruyne gets hurt, so he's going to miss the start of the season. Gundogan leaves. And we haven't really heard much in terms of like transfer business on them replenishing the talent. Like a lot of the last year was kind of consolidating their best team and going away from the top guys. Now it's like, well, who are the top guys behind Grealish and Haaland right now? And so I'm a little bit questioning of them.
Yeah, Gvardiol, I guess, is the big rumor, and that's probably going to be, you know, their like huge 100 million pound guy. But yeah, it's a different team. I agree with you that they didn't look the sharpest along the, you know, down the stretch. But yeah, I totally agree with you on Arsenal. I feel like I'm going to be an Arsenal downer this whole episode, and I'm going to get a lot of hate for it. But like, that's just, I don't know where I'm at. But yeah, I mean,
the big outside trend, of like what never. You, the big trendy team that had the great upstart season year before, just gets to the top of their market and then it's like regression hits. And we saw this with Chelsea. Remember when Chelsea won the Champions League and everybody was like, well, you know, you can get Chelsea 20-1, 16-1. Now they're down to 8-1 to win the league. It's like, well, yeah, they had a great 4-month run under Tuchel. They won a knockout tournament, but they don't have any goals. They're not going to score enough.
Yeah.
And then they ended up, you know, where'd they finish? Fourth?
Yeah. If you take Arsenal plus 500 now, I mean, you're basically betting that City are going to start really slow and Arsenal are going to start really hot, and that number is going to go the other way. Whereas you can probably get Arsenal plus 1,000 or more, you know, later in the season, halfway through the season, something like that.
I'll be honest, I don't have them as the second best team in the league.
So who do you have?
Your boys.
Hey, let's go.
I just think that, like, they had like a down year. There was a lot of like Murphy's Law shit that went wrong with Liverpool last year. You lived through it. Like every set piece going in against them, they couldn't defend set pieces. Like, yes, Van Dijk gets a year older, but I think it was just kind of like an in-between moment. Like, we forget how much Liverpool went all in that season before, and there was always going to be a natural letdown from chasing the quadruple, from having everybody go to the max as much as they did. And you saw kind of the natural regression of that in the first half of the season. But once they made that little tactical tweak to put, you know, Trent in the midfield, I thought they improved defensively, and all of their numbers took a real step forward defensively, whether it was, you know, ball winning ball retention and kind of pressing success. And then Liverpool finished the season, right? You just take the raw expected goal differential, and they were like a tenth of a goal worse than Arsenal for the whole season. Now, if you watch the games, you would never imagine that. But Liverpool getting McAllister, I think, is a bigger deal than maybe we're realizing, just because of his role. And he was Brighton's most important player last year by pretty much any metric you look at. So, you know, I think they've had a decent start to the summer window here. And, you know, we forget, like, Arsenal closed on the road at Liverpool as a pick'em. If they had played that game in May, I think Liverpool would have been a solid favorite at home. So I just don't really have a huge gap. I think Liverpool is the slightest of margins better. And I also think Newcastle's like not that far behind in terms of their ability, because of just how dominant they were. I mean, if you look at just the second half of the season, which I know Arsenal started to fall off, so you're kind of catching Arsenal kind of at the bottom as they started to, you know, fall down the table a little
bit. You're slicing the cake the way you want it.
Right. But if you just take like a post-World Cup world.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big slice. That's the thing. Yeah, I've done the same, but it's half the season. It's more than half the season.
And Liverpool was plus 0.73 per 90. Arsenal was plus 0.65. Newcastle was the second best team. They were plus 1 per 90. That number is impressive, especially when you consider that it was when Isak was like really finally healthy and really featured more than Wilson. Not that Wilson didn't also score a bunch of goals, but Isak's creativity and kind of his ability really shone. So I don't think there's a huge gap between the Liverpool, Newcastle, Arsenal contingent. And so, you know, maybe Newcastle at 16.
So you like Newcastle, it sounds like, for, you know, just if we're picking a long shot, I mean, yeah, they're plus 1600. It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah, they would be my pick. Just because I don't really see a lot of holes. They probably need another like wide forward for me to really be like, okay, now they have the attacking depth and firepower.
Yeah, they're trying to get Harvey Barnes, maybe. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, this transitions right into Golden Boot, right? Which I think is like also part of the discussion with City maybe regressing, is that Haaland is basically his first ever season fit. And neither of us were high on Haaland for the Golden Boot in this episode last season. And part of that was, well, he never stays fit. He's probably played 20 games, 25 games, and you know, 50 million goals later, here we are, and he's a massive favorite for the Golden Boot. I'm still sort of interested in going somewhere else and basically betting on an injury. I mean, he's missed more matches every season of his career than last year. And, you know, his over-under is 29.5. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'll just bet on an injury, right? And I think that what you said earlier also about, you know, Liverpool's season after they played, you know, what did they play? 65, 70 games, going for the quadruple, etc. I feel like, I mean, I'm sure you used to play fantasy football, fantasy NFL, maybe you still do, but like there was the old thing where if a running back got 300 carries, you're supposed to like avoid them. They're going to fall off. I feel like there's something in that with soccer. It just hasn't been written about yet, with like a number of minutes, number of matches, no time off, etc., where I expect some sort of regression. And I just, you know, unless they're just injecting him with something or whatever's going on at City, I don't know, but I just find it to be I would find it to be very weird if he spent basically no time injured again this season.
Yeah, I agree. And you kind of saw the effects of the long season, I thought, in the last month. He was not the same.
Shot
for 90 was down. The goals kind of dried up a little bit. And again, he still is, because of his style, as good as he is at generating shots and great shots, he still is a little bit of a product of a system, because he's not creating for others. He's not ball progressing. He's just the best in the world at getting on the end of everything and finishing it. And so with that nature, if City regresses around him, he will suffer more than I think other top strikers will. Now, Haaland has cost me a lot of money in the last year. because, you know, I would bet a lot of, say, well, you know, City's obviously the best team in the league, but are they this good? Are they this good? And they were. But I think that, in the Golden Boot market, the first name that came up was Isak for me at 35-1.
Isak, interesting.
I don't know if he can like stay healthy enough.
Also, while Wilson is healthy, who also has his injury problems, I mean, he's still sort of the main man and the guy on pen. So going into the season, I don't like it off the bat. But what do you like about Isak?
I just like that, you know, he came into the league and was getting 10 goals and 16 90s. In a team that I think has room for upward growth as an attack, and a team that I think, we talked about playing from ahead. I think we tweeted about this a few times, like just how good they were once they get in that game state. But 10 goals and 16 90s, decently backed up by the numbers, you know, 0.6 goals per 90, 0.5 XG per 90. It's not going to win you the Golden Boot, but like, could he take a step forward at age 22 going into his age 23 season? I've seen less heralded players take leaps like that. When you just go down the board, though, like Kane 6-1, Salah plus 750, like not really good enough for me to go against Haaland. I think Nunez will have that season, but if he's not on pens, because Salah is, like, don't really want him. Like same thing with like Son at 35-1, and I'm selling him. I'm selling Rashford. I know he just had a career year, but a lot of it was built on air. Finishing air and kind of just like being the best finisher in the world for a 2 month period.
Also not on pens.
Generally, yeah, right. So he won't be. He took some pens, right?
He took maybe 2-3 years ago. He took some pens, but I think Bruno is like for sure on pens again, back to being the guy.
And they probably should be. So you know, there's like trying to find who's going to be on pens for the team.
Yeah.
Rashford didn't take a pen last year. That's interesting. So Bruno only took two, but they only had three. So it's kind of wild. If you look at, just in general, like the market, like if United goes and gets somebody like an Osimhen, then I'm intrigued. I wonder what he would open. I don't think it's going to happen though. And Kunku 25-1, no thanks. Just to kind of think the Bundesliga tax will hit him a little bit. I love Chris, but he's not going to be in an explosive enough team. So yeah, you look around the board, like the Wilson Isak thing. I wish only one of them played for Newcastle, and then I'd bet them. But
I'm curious. I'm curious about Kane and Mo. Why you think those numbers aren't good enough? Because basically, what I'm thinking is, if you're betting against Haaland, you're betting on an injury. And right. So if you're betting on an injury, then I just want someone who's on pens, you know, 90 every game and 20 plus goals. Like, who can get to 20 plus goals? Because that's good enough to win a golden boot a lot. And both of them are, you know, as consistent as can be. And both of them have better numbers than last year, obviously, because of Haaland.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's a good point. You could convince me into betting Harry Kane. Again, I just think that the thing, although there is the, you know, the ever looming January thing, which I don't think would happen, but, you know, could happen. Kane just like consistently healthy the last three years, really, you know, on the pens, you know, in a really bad Tottenham team, still got to 30 last year. We know he's going to finish over his XG. And so not that I look at underlying number, like not that I say like I'm going to ignore underlying numbers, but with Kane, like the track record is the track record now. I see your point on that. I don't usually bet the golden boot market because that's just I'm tying up a lot of money in a market that I think is pretty volatile. And, you know, unless Haaland gets hurt, he probably wins it. So if he does get hurt, Kane would be the name for me.
I just think it's fun, you know, about
the age profile with him.
Yeah, it's kind of
a little bit of a decline in the numbers. I know this became like an ongoing bit between us last year because I said I'm not putting Salah in my FPL team. I don't know much about FPL, but Salah ended up 19 and 12, and it was like the first half of the season, he wasn't scoring any goals. I was taking my victory lap. But some of the dribbling numbers did go down, but then I was informed that FBref changed how they calculate the dribbling numbers, and I was like,
because they switched to Opta, yeah.
Yeah, there was a clear decline in some of the numbers across the board for Mo last year.
Yeah.
I just think like age, you know, in his age 30 year, now going into 31 year, it's like, well, have we seen the best of Mo already? I would say the answer is probably.
Yeah. Yeah, the other like very long shots would be Ollie Watkins. Again, it's like, it's similar to your Jesus shout of last season where it's like, we know he's an average finisher. I just need him to get lucky one season. And again, this all relies on Haaland getting hurt. So there's not even a shout if he doesn't get hurt. And then Julian Alvarez. I mean, again, if Haaland gets severely hurt and he just starts 25 games somehow or something like that, sure, he could win it. And he's plus 4,000. So, you know, I don't know, something there.
Yeah, I just don't really see the huge upside for Watkins in that team.
Yeah.
Okay. Even last year, you know, he's like below, he's 0.43 goals per 90 last year. You look at like his track record, I don't really ever see him going higher than that. Whereas somebody like Isak, who is 35-1, could take that kind of next leap forward.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. Has the shots, has the XG, has the explosiveness. Isak
was top 10 goals per 90 last year.
Yeah.
At age 22.
I like it.
90s. So I just don't know what the Wilson situation is. They playing them together.
Yeah, the thing, like, I know because FPL, I got completely screwed by this, but in the matches where they started together, Isak was kind of wide left.
Yeah.
And Callum was down the middle, and his XG and his shots fell off a cliff when he played there. He was much more like creator, like bring the ball into the box kind of guy, like dribble the ball into the box kind of guy.
And that's really the thing with his skill set too, which I think gets him on the field more, but may not get him goals all the time. It's just like his creativity with the ball at his feet is probably his best asset.
Yeah.
Like you look at just like his FBref page, like progressive passes, progressive carries, take ons, progressive passes received.
Yeah. Monster.
All of them are like his, you know, the little bars are all, you know, green, and that's always been his strength. Whereas Wilson is more of a pure poacher type.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get the level of production from the wide area. So you're going to play the two of them together. I mean, that's a fun group, though.
Yeah, I mean, Wilson might be the shout, right? You just need him to stay fit. If he can just play like...
Do it.
Yeah, until he does one time, right? Like that's what we're betting on. It's like a long shot. Yeah, I mean,
31. Like, I just...
It's very unlikely. I'm not saying it's like a, you know, a sure thing at all, but 35-1, I don't know, might be something. But anyway, let's go back to some team stuff. Let's go top four, which should be really, really competitive this year. I mean, all the European places are going to be really competitive. City, we don't have to talk about. They're minus 2,000, which I don't think I've ever seen for top four. But then, yeah, I mean, it's Arsenal and Liverpool tied at minus 175. Man United next, minus 140. Newcastle, Chelsea a little bit outside that. And then, you know, some longer shot teams. Anything you see there?
This is Pedro from the Arsenal Opinion Podcast, and I am hyped about the title running. Can Arsenal pit Pep and Klopp? Will our young squad be described as mentality monsters? Is Mikel Arteta truly a generational saucy manager? Come and join us on the Arsenal Opinion Podcast to follow the boys on this historic 2024 Premier League title running and hear analysis of the games, the hottest transfer rumours, the Arsenal culture, and the business of football. 3 times a week exclusively on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Search the Arsenal Opinion now and come and join the fun.
Yeah, give me team 5 and 6. I think that the market is kind of making there a bigger gap than there actually is between Newcastle, Chelsea, United, Arsenal, and Liverpool. And so, you know, at plus 130, you can find out there on Newcastle to make top four. That's probably the favorite bet that I've, it's actually the only bet that I've made in the Premier League season. It's just like the upward potential of a January is always there. Like, how to decide they want to spend their money, which we know they have money for days.
Unlimited.
The defense made real improvements and was sustainable. There was a period last year where I was betting against Newcastle, kind of like around the World Cup break, where I was saying like, well, you know, Wilson's kind of banged up and Isak hasn't really been bet in. And so, you know, where are the rest of the goals coming from? Like, there's no way Almiron keeps this up. And like they were scoring early in every game and it was really helping their numbers because of how they were playing. And they would get stuck. They kept getting bogged down in these draws, where it was like 0-0, 1-1, 0-0, 1-1 forever, and they don't really play aggressively. You know, with Isak, Wilson, Joe Linton getting, you know, adding some goals, like this team now all of a sudden, and Guimarães, of course, has enough depth for me to believe. And it kind of comes down to me being just a general skeptic in Arsenal and United. Because United, as currently constructed, was a really overrated team last year. Everybody kind of ate up the Ten Hag, you know, magic of how he really changed the team. But you look at the underlying profile and it's like not that impressive. They were sixth in attacking XG per 90. They were seventh in defensive XG per 90, 11th in box entries allowed. They were sixth in box entries for. And they were 14th in set piece offense and 8th in set piece defense. Expected threat, 7th going forward, 12th against. Like, this was not a team that was tilting the field and, like, beating the shit out of everybody. Newcastle, Arsenal, and Liverpool were. So, Rashford isn't probably going to cool off. And once he did in the second half, it was like, Casemiro better score or, like, where are the goals coming from? And like, I like that about the Ten Hag system, that he gets the midfielders forward and gets them involved. And I think that's generally good. But like, who is the striker? And if it's the Atalanta kid, like, I'm just kind of skeptical of him making a jump to the Prem. I don't know that he's ready for that, especially, you know, the Prem and the top four level. I'm going to be a seller. De Gea, as good, as much as everybody slights him, and like, he definitely has problems in buildup, and that's why he's not going to be with the team anymore, and like, you know, whatever. But there is value in his shot stopping, which was really, really good. And they actually conceded more XG than Spurs last year. You would regard Spurs as terrible defense.
That's insane. Yeah.
United conceded more XG. So I just think that this house of cards on United is a little bit fraudulent for them to be minus 140. I think they're the team that gets picked off. And I think if you look at Chelsea, I know.
Yeah, because that's I was waiting for you to stop talking so I could say, okay, I understand where you're at on Newcastle. Talk to me about Chelsea, because this number is interesting, but their whole everything about them is interesting, because figuring out where to put them must have been very difficult. How to project them must have been very difficult. How much do you put into last season? How much do you put into the season before that? What do you do with Poch? He hasn't been around in a while at a competitive club level team. And so where are you at on them at plus 150? I mean, is that fair? Like, should they be way above Spurs, way above Brighton in terms of their top four odds?
I think you have to build in some type of regression for Brighton. And I know they lose McAllister, who, like I said earlier, was by the numbers their most impressive player. In terms of like just value add, and the markets felt that way too. But they will, you know, potentially lose a couple of key players here. And I know that they've done this before, and I said this last year, and I was like, well, you know, Brighton had a great year. They'll probably just be like an eighth, ninth, tenth team again. I don't really expect them to you know, be in that elite tier. And then they kind of just threw it in my face and got better with De Zerbi. But Brighton, I'm kind of
probably going to lose Caicedo also. So
yeah, exactly. I think you're at the kind of like the peak of the market on Brighton. Like 4-1 to get top four is just like crazy when you could have got 4-1 to get top six last year.
Yeah.
So I think you're kind of at the peak of the market on Brighton, and I'm not really interested in buying them at this number. But I mean, last year we would have this conversation, and we were like, well, you know, like, are Arsenal and Tottenham better than Chelsea? United is clearly way worse than Chelsea.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And now it's like, well, I mean, you just flip United and Chelsea on the basis of one season. Chelsea did clear out some deadwood. The Saudi situation has really helped them.
Yeah.
Because they're buying all of their older, not good anymore, not healthy enough players. I think that's notable. I think like there is a super weird Man United vibe with this team from the year before. Because remember what happened? They had kind of like the legacy manager who had been there, who had kind of run its course. Not that Tuchel was there that long, but he was there. They toss him and they bring in this new manager. And in the case of Chelsea, it was Potter. In the case of United, it was Ragnick, right? And for like a month, it legitimately worked. Like, United was playing really well heading into that Champions League. And then Potter's Chelsea were actually making real improvements and playing as like a plus 4.4 per 90 team. So like a borderline top four team for like a 2 month period, but nobody could score. Like, the finishing just went God cold. Havertz was horrible. Mount, like, nobody could score. And that has a psychological effect to the point where once they were bounced from the Champions League, and then Potter got the sack, and they bring in the clown Lampard, it's like, well, the players stopped kidding. I thought that was very evident, but like, Chelsea just gave up. But like, the Brentford game at home, when they had like four shots, I was like, this team doesn't give a shit. And even against like, they, I think they beat Bournemouth, but it was ugly. And I'm like, well, this team, like, they don't care. And that's the same thing that happened with United. Remember, it was like, well, United showed under Ragnick this brief period of
they confidence. Can play.
They can do this. And then they lost that Champions League tie, and Ragnick was a lame duck, and they knew he wasn't coming back, and they kind of just quit and mailed it in. I think it's the same thing. The Chelsea talent level with Nkunku in the mix now, with Lukaku back, which I know everybody hates him, but like, he was fine in Serie A last year.
I also don't think he'll stay, but that's, you know, besides the point. Yeah.
He's in the plans for now, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how well he fits in Pochettino's system because he doesn't really press or do any defensive work, but yeah, that'll be interesting. But, and they have a real manager. And like, I'm partial to Poch as a Spurs fan.
He's your guy.
I've seen what he can do. I think PSG was a horrible fit. That's like a Mickey Mouse club that like doesn't really have any culture or plan, just like star building and let them do whatever they want. They're kind of like the LA Clippers of basketball if you're an NBA fan. But like, what, how are we not buying Chelsea at the floor here of the market on them? Now, I thought the market would be a little lower. Like, I was like, if I could, like, 25, 30 to 1, I'm going to buy Chelsea to win the league. And it was 16. I was like, ah, it's not good enough. But in terms of getting top four, if you think Liverpool, Arsenal, and United have flaws, which I think all of them have different kinds of flaws, then Chelsea is certainly a good buy team. And I like Enzo. I think their defense will take a step forward just because of Poch. And a little bit of belief can go a long way. Some of the numbers on their running was kind of wild. Like, they weren't running nearly as much as other teams in the league. That's not going to fly under Mauricio. So I still believe in Poch. I still believe in this collection of talent. Like, I'm not a Mudrick guy. I thought he was an overpay. But they still have enough at that club to be interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's a good pitch. Good pitch. Any other outside teams you like? Not for top four necessarily, but like I'm looking at top six, top 10. I feel like Villa's being a little disrespected. I saw they're minus 200 in the top 10. I'm like, really? To me, they're just like easily a top 10 team, but you know, I could be very wrong there. And then let's go to relegation. Also, I'm curious where you're at.
Man, it's funny because I feel like last year the Premier League was much more easily defined into like tiers.
Yeah.
This year, because all three teams from last year stayed up, this relegation race, man, it's going to be wild.
It's going to be really crazy.
The three who came up are always threats. So like Burnley, Luton, Sheffield. I don't think anybody expects Luton to stay up. I don't expect that either, but like crazy shit has happened. Huddersfield Town, they're probably the worst team since the Town, and they stayed up in the first year. It was a miracle. It was not really based on any pure vibes.
And then what, they get like 20 points the next year or something like that?
They do it for 1 year, maybe. I will definitely have them as my worst team projected once I get to the numbers, and I will definitely have Sheffield 19th. The question is, you know, what do you make of Forest? Because if you look at just like who they bought, and how that came together, Forest on paper does not have they're not one of the three worst teams, but Cooper was there all year and they played like one of the three worst teams over the course of the season. Now their results were a little bit uneven because they had a bunch of games where they got the shit beat out of them.
Yeah.
And then they had a bunch of like good performances. And so like the aggregates weren't all that good. Like away from home last year, they had one win and they scored 11 goals in 19 games. but at home, you know, you put together a season with a positive goal differential, albeit a negative expected goal differential, and you can kind of make a survival method out of it. But I don't know that Forest has improved the defense at all.
Yeah.
And I haven't
seen
so far.
They haven't. Yeah.
Right. And so I think that was their thing. Like they went out and bought a lot of these like players that could maybe make their offense better, but they didn't really address the defense. Taiwo had a nice finish to the season. You know, Forest for me, I think is the next team that I would take.
What about Bournemouth?
They're another interesting case. Now Bournemouth,
because I love Bournemouth, but I know the numbers are the numbers. They just were horrendous. But
the shape of the season,
yeah,
has to have you encouraged for Bournemouth.
Yeah,
As bad as they were in the first half,
for sure,
and then as competent as the attack was in the second half, makes me think that like they could actually be a team that pushes into like 15th.
Yeah.
Maybe. If you look at, you know, I'm kind of skeptical on how predictive this is, but just like looking at the second half only, how did a team do? Bournemouth was minus 0.6 per 90, which was the sixth worst. Wolves was the worst team in the league in the second half. They are another team. So it's really Wolves and Forest for me, where I'm just like, are we sure they shouldn't be, you know, about to be relegated here?
I
believe in Company and Burnley. I think that the way he's got them playing in a different, you know, the way that they bossed the championship last year, it's kind of similar to, it's not the same level as Fulham from 2 years ago, because the underlying numbers aren't that impressive. But when you put up 101 points in the championship, you're going to turn some heads and you're going to make me believe that like, okay, I need to do something with your power rating, especially with how they did play. Like the XG wasn't all that impressive, but they played from the front so much that I think that there's a natural kind of deflator game state type thing on their numbers. I think Burnley unders will be a good bet early in the season for sure. But yeah, I think Burnley's better than Nottingham Forest. I think they may be better than Wolves. So I'm going to say that
Wolves are definitely a good shout. I mean, I've been betting them to be relegated, and obviously they're still in the league, so you know, not good for me. But they come in, they've just gotten rid of a bunch of starters, also, and they haven't bought anyone.
Exactly.
And so I don't know what their financial situation is. I think there's a little like FFP maybe going on there. But, you know, they get rid of Neves, they get rid of Collins, they get rid of Cody. They release Moutinho. They, you know, loan out whatever, some other guys. They just like don't have a team right now. They still don't really have a goal scorer. Don't know, you know, they have one center back. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I think I'm with you there. There's no one else that seems like a great bet to me, I don't think. Yeah, I mean, where are you at on... I don't think they'll be relegated, but where are you at on Brentford? How do you go about grading a team that, you know, in baseball, it's... There's WAR, there's wins above replacement. You can say, okay, their best player's out. He's worth this many wins, roughly. I can make a sort of guess. How many points is Tony worth to Brentford, who's going to be missing the first like 6 months of the season or something like that? And he's just obviously their best player and their focal point.
Yeah, so he's missing half the year, right? So he'll be back for the second half. So he's eligible in January?
Yeah, January.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's about 10 goals. Because I would project him for about 15 to 20 goals in a season, so we'll roughly shave off half the season production.
Yeah,
you know, 10 goals is going to be in the course of a season about 25% of what Brentford does in a year on average. Like they're probably going to score about 60 goals. That's generous. So you know, you're looking at like 20% of their offensive production. Now it's not like a one for one, but like who's the backup?
Wissa.
Right, and that's the thing. I am enough of a believer in Mbeumo and Wissa for me to say that they can kind of fade this enough.
I love Wissa.
Yeah, and like his numbers were fine. And like the thing was about Tony and Brentford was that Tony missed time last year. He didn't play every game. And when he was out there, 0.4 non-penalty goals is the per 90, and 0.31 non-penalty XG. It's not Ivan Tony numbers, but you know, is it worth like a 5 to 10% deduction on their attacking quality? How much is that worth over the course of the season? Like 7 or 8 points, probably.
Right.
So, I think that you're going to hear us talk a lot this season about Brentford and kind of like how do they keep doing this. I still don't understand how the market was that high on them last, like never caught up to them, because the first year it made sense. It's like, well, the sample's small. We know that like they're a small club and they haven't really had so like we're gonna regress them back to like they should be like the 16th best team in the league, 17th. And I said this year, last year on this pod, I said
yes.
I wanted to bet against Brentford, but like the market thinks they suck, and I don't think they suck. I think
they just. I remember this vividly. They were like their point total was like in the 30s.
It was 39.5.
Yeah,
and like heading up at the over.
Yeah, ridiculous.
And so we don't have point totals yet, but you can kind of just pull it up based on top 10 odds. The market has them as the 10th best team in the Premier League. Excuse me, 11th best team in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So they have a pretty solid top 8 with City, Arsenal, United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Newcastle, Tottenham, Brighton, Villa, West Ham. And then Brentford is the next of the rest. So they think they're about the 11th best team. Now, I have them at about 12th. And that's without, or that's with kind of like a manual adjustment. Like I haven't finalized any of this. That's manual adjustment on kind of like what I think Brentford is now. And a lot of it is because just like there's six teams that are automatically below them.
Right. Yeah.
The Fulham, like Fulham, Wolves, Everton, Forest, Burnley, Bournemouth, Sheffield, Luton. That's actually seven teams where I'm just like, there's no way I can have them worse than Brentford, better than Brentford. So I think Brentford's like the super boring team this year.
I like the top 10 odds though when you say that, right? They're plus 250. And then the next team above them is West Ham at minus 125.
No, thank you. They're in Europe.
Give me a break. That's a huge gap and not really West deserved.
In Europe, they had the second oldest team. They lost their most important player.
Moyes is still there.
I think they have a high floor, but like, what are they spending the money on too? Like, they need goals. And they can't rely on Antonio again. Scamacca, I'm really not sold on.
Yeah, me neither.
So like Ings.
Yeah.
Like, no thanks. So like they need goals. And how they reinvest this money from Rice is really important because they are, like I said, the second oldest team. And there are some, it's pretty, if you just faded the top three oldest teams every year and bet on the three younger teams generally from the season before, you would have done decently well. The youngest three teams in the league last year, Arsenal, Brentford, Leeds. Now Leeds obviously got relegated, but I think that was kind of an extenuating circumstance. The year before, the oldest teams, Watford and Burnley both went down. That was notable. And then they had already gotten relegated. They were the oldest team. The next oldest teams, I'm just sorting by like FBref age. Look at that. West Ham. How did they do last year? They were unlucky, but they underperformed relative to expectations. Second oldest team after that, your Reds. So I think there's something to it where, like, I don't want to back these really old teams. And you saw this in Spain, and we did our Spain pod, and I said, look, like, Sevilla was one of the oldest teams in Europe, and they finished in the bottom half of the league. The cliff comes faster than you realize for these teams. Yeah. And when we just say, like, I know it's only a 3-month gap, but it's also a 1-year gap from the start of last season. And so you have to factor in that, like, players don't just stay static. Like, Liverpool has done a really nice job, I think, of turning over the team, getting to the next generation. Arsenal, I mean, they were really shit for like 3 years, relatively, because they had made this huge investment in youth, and eventually they bet that it would pop, and it popped last year. Now, can they take the next step? I don't know. But the one thing you could say for Arsenal, they were old in one area. It was central midfield. It was Xhaka and Partey with no depth. And like now they go get Rice.
Jorginho too, yeah.
Exactly. They go get Rice and it's like, whoa, maybe this is going to work. So it could work. But again,
I went for top 10. That's my favorite bet of the podcast, I think.
I think it's perfect. I'll tell a quick
story. They're young. They're smart. You know they're going to make some good purchases. You know, I like Nathan Collins. Flecken is supposed to be really good. You know, they're going to sell Riots somehow, some way. Wiss is good. Yeah.
There's not a lot of competition there.
Yeah, there's not. I agree with you that you can just rule out seven teams. So I feel like I'm getting good value. It's basically Brentford versus West Ham and Palace in like a little 3-team tournament. To like, can any of these teams finish 10th? And like, yeah, I like my odds.
It was funny. We had like an award show. It was like mostly a joke, but it was fun for our company, the Action Network, on Tuesday night. And the win of the season was our Wonder Goal Parlay, which was Brentford, Gladbach, and Nottingham Forest the week before the World Cup, 200-1. And the winning, and I got the mic, and I said, you know, most of the company doesn't really know soccer.
Yeah, yeah.
I got the mic, and I said, the beauty of this parlay winning is that the guy who scored the winning goal in the biggest leg was Ivan Toney in stoppage time, who is now suspended. 200 violations of the FA gambling policy.
Yeah.
He's in like rehab to like help his gambling addiction.
Yeah.
And then that got a good laugh at everybody.
That's awesome. Amazing.
Good
way to end it. Anthony, I know you're doing more stuff than just Wonder Goal, which will be back in, you know, a few weeks. What else are you doing? Where can people read your work, hear your work, all that stuff?
Yeah, we're in the thick of baseball season, so grinding away baseball. Sorry about your Mets. my Phils are doing a little better. But you can find me in the Action Network app on the website. You can find me on Twitter at Anthony DeBundo, DABBUNDO. We're going to be doing some Women's World Cup. It's really hard to project because there's not a lot of data out there. But we're going to do some of that and try to have some fun, you know, bets to sweat through for the next month until we get into Prem. And then, like I said, August, pretty much right around August 1st, we'll probably be doing our full previews. We'll have Alon on to do the draft again. We had fun with that last year. And then we cover all 5 leagues, not as much as the Prem, but we'll also do a pod focusing on the other 4 big leagues, some fun striker movement. I'm excited to see like the Balogun situation, the Openda situation, the Osimhen situation, like Holland too. Like there's all kinds of striker news to be sorted out through the next month. Give me everything.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Peace. Sports Social Podcast Network.